Well, now, St. Paul is continuing his conversation with the Corinthians. He is disturbed because he has gotten reports from Chloe's people that there are folks among the Corinthians who believe they are superior to their brothers and sisters because they have a certain spiritual gift, because they've had a certain experience, because they have certain knowledge. And this disturbs Paul. He wants to address it directly. Last week we talked about how he made a distinction between the spirit of this age and the spirit of God that is supposed to be at work in the Corinthians and in us. This week he says, I can't talk to y'all like a bunch of spiritual people. You think you're oh so spiritual. I can't talk to you like a bunch of spiritual people. I have to talk to you like a bunch of babies. He didn't mean it as a compliment. Is there a more self-centered creature in the world than a baby? I mean, they have to be to survive, right? When they want something, they want it, and they want it now, and they let you know they want it, whether it's food, whether it's a change of diaper, whether it's to be held. But then as we mature, we're supposed to begin to not only do some things for ourselves, but help other people along the way, recognizing that the world does not center on us. But Paul says, you people are still babies. You think you're oh so mature. You think you're oh so spiritual. No way. You're babies. I couldn't feed you solid food. I had to feed you milk. Isn't it interesting that Paul describes himself as a mother at that point? Because in that day, there was only one place you got milk. Paul is their mother, feeding them on milk, because they're not ready for solid food. Now, what's the evidence that they're not ready for solid food? I find this very interesting. The evidence that they're not ready for solid food is all the jealousy and quarreling among them. Whew, wonder what he'd say about our church today. Wonder what he'd say about our United Methodist Church. We can't even say that we disagree when it's obvious to everybody that we do disagree. That's how infantile we still are, according to Paul's standard. But then he offers a number of images. The one today is drawn from the agricultural realm, but then he offers the image of building. Later he'll offer the image of the human body to try to help the Corinthians see how intertwined their lives are, how they depend upon each other so very much, and that if they're going to grow as disciples of Jesus, they're going to have to get out of infancy and start to mature. Now, there are a number of different models of how we grow as followers of Jesus, become followers of Jesus. I grew up in the rural South, and the model that I grew up with was what you might call a kind of magical model. You would go to a revival, and you would have a very intense and emotional experience. And when you had that intense and emotional experience, you would walk up the aisle. And once you walked up the aisle and accepted Jesus as your personal Savior, you would be taken out and baptized. And that's pretty much the end of it. That was it. You were a follower of Jesus. You were a disciple. Boom. Magic. Never really worked for me. Now, our tradition handles it a little bit differently. We have a kind of manufacturing image of how you make disciples. We manufacture disciples of Jesus. We baptize them when they're infants, and we put them on the assembly line. And they go through nursery and first grade Sunday school, second grade Sunday school, third grade Sunday school, fourth grade Sunday school, fifth grade Sunday school. Then in sixth grade, they go through confirmation, the end of which makes them disciples of Jesus. No more to do. That still doesn't work. Now, I'm not saying that people can't have an intense emotional experience of the presence of God. I hope at some point or other we all do. But that's a beginning, not an ending. I'm not saying we shouldn't be involved in Sunday school, either as children or adults. All of that is helpful. What I am saying is that this is a lifelong process. It has many beginnings, but no ending. The process, as Paul describes it, is that one person will come along and plant a seed. Apparently, there have been some people in Corinth who are claiming credit for themselves because of who converted them. Now, there are scholars who would dispute this, but he mentions it several times. I think Paul is serious here. One says, I belong to Apollos. Another says, I belong to Cephas. Another says, I belong to Paul. He says, no, you don't belong to any of us. Because you see, one of us planted the seed, another watered the seed. Another came along and cultivated. But none of us had anything to do with your growing, not directly. It's God who gives the growth. We just assist along the way. I think that's a recommendation for our itinerant system, actually. You know, you probably won't wind up with the same pastor all your young life. But one pastor will bring a certain set of gifts, and then another pastor will bring another set of gifts, and another will bring another set of gifts. And when you have more than one pastor on staff, you get a whole collection of gifts all at once. But we all work together. We all have the same goal, to help produce disciples of Jesus Christ. According to the discipline, that's our job description. We are to be out making. I don't really like that word, too much of the manufacturing about it. Maybe growing disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. Not just so we can feel good about ourselves, not just so we can feel spiritually superior or knowledgeable, for the transformation of the world. That's our job. And so along the way, somebody plants seeds, somebody waters, somebody cultivates, and the cycle goes on over and over and over. Because you see, in an agricultural cycle, you don't just do it once and then stop. If you did, you would starve. No, every year you plant, you water, you cultivate, you harvest. And then when the season is there to lie fallow, I know my daddy used to plant clover over the whole garden area. He said it added nitrogen to the soil when we plowed it under in the spring. And we did it over and over and over and over. I think that's what Paul is encouraging. That continual cycle of growth within the community of faith. It never stops. I mentioned this robe. Some of you knew R. Harold Hips. R. was 93, quite a character. R. was a United Methodist pastor, had gone to High Point College and Duke Divinity School. Now, the legend has it that he was kicked out of High Point on two different occasions before he finally graduated. Both times for criticizing the administration. It's a wonder they let him back in the second time. While he was the minister of education at West Market Street Church in Greensboro, he was host to some students who sat down at a lunch counter where they were forbidden to sit because of their race. There were folks who weren't too happy about that with R either. But the thing I remember most about R was his joy. Everywhere he went, he planted joy. And yesterday, instead of a eulogy, we had, now I should tell you, R designed his own service. He didn't put in requests, he put in demands. This is one of them. And we had a time in the service that was called We Remember R. There were some people there that he had met when they were children who talked about the seeds that he had sown in their lives. There were folks there who had met him when they were teenagers talked about how he had watered those seeds of faith that had been in his that had been planted in their local church. Some folks he met when they were in seminary or already working in churches. In his role as the leader of the Christian Educators Fellowship, he traveled the world teaching people the joy of this faith that we are called to. I first met R. when I was in seminary. I had no idea who he was. I was in Evanston, Illinois. He came up, this diminutive fellow who looked very much like a leprechaun. I think maybe he was, actually. He gave me the best pastoral advice I ever received. It was very brief. He said, "For you who are going to go on and serve churches, I just have two things to tell you. Love the people and keep them dancing." I thought, great advice. Now, he probably meant literal dancing, okay? Which is probably not something you want to see me do. But I think he also meant the figurative dance, that dance of joy, David dancing before the ark in ecstasy. He started a service here called the Jazz Mass. And yesterday's service was a Jazz Mass with the jazz band and everything. On Shrove Tuesday, every year in this congregation, we have pancakes downstairs, and then we come up here. We celebrate Holy Communion. We are led in by a jazz band. We dance in. And we celebrate the joy of the many gifts of God that the next day we will begin to give up, because the next day is Ash Wednesday. For a period of time, we will not deny their goodness, but we will choose to limit our use of some of the gifts of God, partially in solidarity with those who don't have that choice, who don't have those gifts available, partially to remind ourselves that we don't depend upon all of these physical things. We depend upon the love of God, mediated through so many different ways. And that contrast between the dancing and joy of Shrove Tuesday and the Jazz Mass and the solemnity of Ash Wednesday marks the transition into Lent with a stark line. Lent has never been more meaningful to me than after I started being part of Jazz Mass and then Ash Wednesday. Now, what I say about R really should be true of any of us. We should be out there planting those seeds of the joy of our faith wherever we go, wherever we have an opportunity, watering the seeds of faith that have been planted by others, helping them to grow in the joy of this faith, cultivating the soil so that they can find the room to breathe and grow, sometimes disturbing the soil so they will have room to grow. You see, some folks see church as a place where you come to be with people who all agree with you. I don't find that to be church. I think we come to church to learn to love the people who don't agree with us. I believe when Jesus said, "Love your enemies and do good to those who hate you and bless those who curse you," he then gave us a laboratory in which to practice that, and it's called the church. This is where we practice so we can go out into the world and love those who may hold different opinions, do things in different ways. This is what we are called to. This is the field. We still call it the mission field, don't we? You are God's field. This neighborhood is God's field. This world is God's field. We are the gardeners who plant the seeds and water the plants and cultivate the ground and know that finally, it is only God who gives the growth. We don't control a bit of it. We do our part. We do what we can. But we're not the ones in control. It is God who gives the growth. And aren't we grateful that that is the case? Thanks be to God.